WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Most of the victims of Sunday's fire in the Bronx were immigrants from the West African nation of Gambia, or officially the Gambia, like the Bronx. Most other Americans know little about the country or the immigrants who came from there or why. So we're going to take some time now to talk about the place and the people. The Gambia is a small country on the coast of West Africa. It's shaped kind of like a long, thin rectangle, you might say, that borders the Atlantic Ocean on the west and is otherwise completely surrounded by the nation of Senegal. The population of the Gambia is about 1.8 million people, small for a country. The population of the Bronx alone is 1.5 million. Brooklyn is 2.7. The Gambia was ruled mostly by the British in the colonial era. It won its independence in 1965. The current president is Adama Barrow, elected in 2017 and re-elected last year, just in December, in elections generally considered free and fair after a 24-year dictatorship by Yahya Jammeh. We will meet a leader of New York's Gambian community in just a minute, but first, the names of the 17 people who died in the fire have now been released as of just this morning, and I want to say those names out loud to honor them. Here's the CNN list. It has names, ages, and genders. Futumata Drame, 50, female. Futumala Drame, 21, female. Muhammad Drame, 12, male. Nayuma Isha Drame, 19, female. Haji Dukari, 49, male. Fatumata Dukare, 5, female. Haja Dukare, 37, female. Mariam Dukure, 11, female. Mustafa Dukure, 12, male. Omar Jambang, 6, male. Sarah Jane, 27, female. Hawa Mahamadou, forgive me, 5, female. Seydou Touré, 12, male. Fatoumata Tunkara, 43, female. Issatou Djabi, 31, female. Haji Jawara, 47, male. And Ousmane Kanta, age 2, male. The names of the people who died in the Bronx apartment building fire on Sunday, now released to the public by the fire department. With us now is Salim Drame, president of the Gambian Youth Organization, a nonprofit based in the Bronx, not far from the Twin Parks Northwest building. And in a few minutes, we're also, I believe, going to be joined by the ambassador to the U.S. from the Gambia. But Salim Drame, welcome to WNYC. Thank you so much for coming on with us today, and I'm so sorry it's under these circumstances. Hello.
Hello, hello. Thank you so much for having me. So sorry. As we read those names, you know, it's quite a bit, you know,
emotional.
There's
no other possible response than than what you're feeling right now, and there's no shame in tearing up. Some of those people, I mean, one of the things that strikes me is that a number of those people were from the same family. I believe there was one family where 5 people were killed. and another one with several. And one of those families where I kept reading the same last name is the same last name as yours. Were these your relatives, any of them, taken in the fire?
Well, no, they're not my relatives, but I did meet with the father of the individuals that passed away yesterday at the lobby. And yeah, it's very, very, very emotional. We did have one member, Sirajane, who also did pass away that we knew personally, who was an absolutely amazing human being. And we pray that, you know, God grants her soul in heaven.
And what can you say about the decisions or conditions facing surviving family members or just survivors of the fire from the building whose homes are affected?
Yeah, so some of the decisions are like
It's all right. Take a second. And in the meantime, I want to open up the phones and invite anyone from the Gambian community in New York who happens to be listening to call in, and you could pay tribute to any of the victims if you knew them personally, or even if you didn't know them personally, if there's anything you want to say, or talk about your country of origin and talk about your heritage and talk about why you came to this country and talk about the importance of having a Gambian community in the Bronx. If anybody is listening from the Gambian community, I know it's small in the city, but maybe we have some listeners now. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or anyone with questions for our guest, Salim Drame, president of the Gambian Youth Organization based near the building in the Bronx. Salim, you're right.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm fine. I can speak about the decisions and conditions the families are facing. I'm so sorry about that again. So, you know, we've been meeting with these family members, as I mentioned, yesterday. And one of the most important things that we have to know that these families are traumatized. They're grieving and they're mourning for their lost ones. So the least that we, you know, can do for them is to not, you know, try to push families back into that building, because families, you know, do not feel safe. They need to be, you know, relocated to a safe and proper, you know, permanent housing. That's what needs to be happening. We should not be trying to, you know, push families back into that building.
Is it also because of the trauma that they've now experienced in that building?
Oh yes, for sure. I literally, you know, two kids walked in. You can see the trauma on their face. They couldn't, as I was saying hi to them, you know, they could not even greet me back. So it's because of what happened that they're traumatized.
Who is that up to, that relocation effort? Who would have to do that and make the decision and facilitate it? Is it the city government?
The city government. The city government has been really helpful. They say that families do not want to stay at their building. They can, you know, they have the choice of, you know, even returning back to the hotels.
And as far as the decision whether to bring the victims' bodies back to the Gambia or take care of them here, is that primarily shaping up to be a financial decision for those survivors? And do they need help with that financially? It looks like fundraising efforts are underway.
Yeah, so like that decision of families, you know, wanting to be buried back home, that's actually like a religious or it can be a cultural decision that they want. But also, you know, there is some financial hardship that families may face. But there's been amazing outpour support. Again, the city has been really supportive. They do have burial service funds available that families can go ahead and apply for that will take care of any kind of cost dealing with burial.
To give everybody else a little bit of background about the community How many Gambians overall would you say live in New York today, if you have a sense of that?
Yeah, so that's kind of difficult to, because even when we were talking to the council, they didn't have a concrete number, but we can say this is not based off. We can say more than like 10,000 families probably live in New York City.
That's a lot. Are there some most common areas? I guess that part of the Bronx, based on the names that I read of the dead, would you say that most or all of them were Gambian?
Yes, all of them that you read, they were Gambian. Yeah,
and so that's a kind of a Gambian neighborhood.
Yes, it's kind of a Gambian. It's a mixture of we have a huge Hispanic population as well, African American population as well. But Gambians, there's a huge population of Gambians, especially in the in District 15, 14, in Congressional District 15 in general.
Was there a period of time in recent decades when there was the most Gambian immigration to the United States or to New York? And if so, was that for a particular reason, certain particular conditions in the country?
Yeah, we could say maybe from the 1980s to early 2000s. There was like a huge, even my father, you know, came in like a 1990 or to the United States. Again, it's because, you know, to get a better life, to get, you know, better education, to get a better life for, you know, their children. And also the wing goes also to help back home.
What would you consider the biggest issues generally facing the Gambian community in New York these days? Or if I had asked you on the day before the fire, what would you have said?
Yeah, so the biggest issues, these are like, it has connection with all immigrant issues. We are ignored, so I'm saying. For example, like in this building, you know, the building received numerous complaints that have been ignored. So like these non-minority communities, since you can say even the fires have been happening since the 70s to now, and predominantly in where minority communities. So we lost many families across our immigrant communities. We have lack of adequate housing. We're facing discrimination, racism. We have lack of access to resources. Yeah.
I'm curious if life got harder for Gambians in New York under Donald Trump's immigration policies. You said immigration issues, like other immigrants, you know, were near the top of your list. Like if many people got deported or found it harder to become citizens or anything like that, Trump generally did not want any immigration from Africa. And some of our listeners will remember he even used foul language to describe those countries as a group, as sources of immigration. So was there particular pressure then, and has it eased in any particular ways under Biden?
Yeah, so even like Donald Trump, Gambia is not 100%. It's not 100% Muslim country, but it's more than like 90% Muslim country. So even the Muslim ban, again, by Donald Trump, was a direct target to the Muslim community, Muslim immigrant community. You know, so you can say Trump's immigration policies have, you know, proven to be targeting Black, Brown, and Hispanic immigrant communities. So the Gambia community in NYC has faced many deportations and illegal detentions. My uncle is a example of one. They illegally they tried to, you know, deport my uncle maybe two times. We had to stand up and advocate for him. I believe this is about 3 years ago. We had to literally stand up and advocate for my uncle. But right now he's here with us. But without that advocacy and the support of you know, some city officials, somebody like the officials, we would not have my uncle in there.
I see that we have with us on the line now for just a few minutes, the Gambian ambassador to the United States. His name is Dauda Daka Federa. Again, he is Gambia's ambassador to the United States. And I understand that he had come up from D.C., where he's based as ambassador, to the Bronx after the fire to lend support from the consulate. Ambassador, are you there? If so, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. I'm right here.
Thank you.
I
can hear you well. And am I right that you came up from D.C., where you're stationed, to the Bronx after the fire? And if so, what role have you been hoping to play?
Absolutely. This was a horrific fire incident that took so many lives of our people and left many struggling for their lives. The scale of this devastation is such that when it got to my notice, and I decided quickly to go down to the Bronx to be with the community, to be with the imams, the youth leaders, the community leaders, you know, to work with the local authorities to help establish what exactly happened, to help account for our citizens who are missing, help to know how many are dead, how many are wounded. Want to know exactly how many Gambians are impacted by this disaster. So these are issues we've been engaged with the local authorities and the community leaders to get answers to. But I can tell you here that we are very grateful to the local authorities and on the ground, from the governor to the mayor and other elected representatives. Everybody's on one page working on this matter. But we have still frustration about getting the details, the specifics of our citizens who are involved in this. I personally went around from hotel to hotel trying to talk to families and trying to know exactly who are missing. And everybody's confused because we can understand this is COVID period. I went to the hospital, but I am not allowed to enter. I cannot enter there. I understand that. But we don't have the information. We want to know how many are dead. You know, Gambia is a Muslim majority country, mm-hmm. and our custom as Muslims demands that our dead are buried, you know, expeditiously when they died, you know, through Islamic customs. So we can understand what they are doing, but we'll be happy to know how many are dead and how soon are we going to receive our deceased so that we can give them a fitting funeral.
Are you asking the U.S. government in Washington, since you're ambassador to the country, for help for the victims? Is that part of your role?
So far, yes. So far, we are dealing with the local authorities in New York, mm-hmm. the state of New York and the city of New York. I think we can State Department also, of course, they are fully aware of what we're doing. We are keeping them informed about our activities down on the ground. But specifically, we haven't asked them of helping us to get our people. But we think we can handle that with the local authorities in New York.
To broaden out for just a second, Ambassador, could you tell Americans listening a little bit about your country's relationship with the United States? Do you consider the U.S. an ally? Do you get U.S. aid? Anything like that?
Absolutely. U.S. is one of our strongest friends and allies. We have a lot in common. We share. We are all a democracy. I'm sure you may be aware, Gambia, from independence until 1994, we were a beacon of light in terms of democracy, respect for human rights in the sub-region. And we were an important voice and a model of democracy in our sub-region. And I dare say around the world until 1994, when we had a military coup that completely decimated our democratic institutions, and the dictator continued to rule our country for more than two decades. It was until 2016 that we took our country back, and the U.S. was very, very supportive, helping Gambians to regain our country from dictatorship. And since we come back to democracy, United States continue to stand by us, giving us support alongside our other partners, so that we continue to entrench our democratic credentials and regain our past lost glory.
Even under Trump?
Even under Donald Trump, yes, you know, America and Gambia, we have strong relationship, even people to people. So it doesn't matter what government's in there, but you know, we have a strong diaspora here in the U.S., Gambian Americans, and also generally the black American black Americans. A lot of them really trace their roots back to where we come from, our sub-region. So we have cultural linkages with America. We have investment, which is not too high, but we want to see more American investment on the ground too. We are working to do that. But obviously, it doesn't matter which government is in the White House. The relationship between the U.S. and Gambia has always been very strong.
And I see that your president was reelected just last month in elections considered free and fair by outside observers, but the losing candidates falsely claimed fraud. You know, we have some experience with that recently in this country, too. Any advice on how to handle fraudulent claims of election fraud?
Absolutely. I think the key is to have strong institutions, strong judiciary, you know, because, you know, of course, your democracy had been challenged. We are aware because we follow your politics here closely. But obviously, we can expect this now around the world. Democracies will be challenged. But I think everybody should work together to defend democracy. Because as I always tell my colleagues, democratic credentials is not an exclusive of any geographic region or race. These are universal values. Every individual needs freedom. We want to be free. We want to think freely. We want to associate freely. We want to choose our leaders that we trust can run our affairs. So democracy, I think, is important, and it's the model that really can ensure national security and global security, I dare say. So we should all fight for it. But the key is the strong institutions. You know, during the dictatorship in the Gambia, our judiciary was simply a law firm for the executive. They decide, everything is decided in the state house, and the judiciary will simply pass the orders from there. But this is completely changing now. We have a free judiciary. During the last 5 years after election, the president himself been to court on important issues that are important to him, and he lost, I think, two of them. One of them to an ordinary environmental group in a provincial town. They took a matter to government court on a matter of environment, and they won. Mm-hmm. And another one was when the president nominated a particular MP, National Assembly member. You know, the Constitution gave our president the power to nominate 5 National Assembly members, and they sit in the National Assembly, like any other elected National Assembly member, lawmakers. So one of them, the president decided this person is no longer serving our interests as a government, and he wanted to remove her. But the person went to court and said, no, although you appointed me, but I don't think you have power to remove me from here. Mm-hmm. So the matter went to court. And the court decided the lower court decided in favor of the government, and the matter was appealed to the Supreme Court. All the judges in the Supreme Court are appointed by this sitting president. Guess what? The Supreme Court ruled in favor of the individual.
Ruled against the person who appointed them. So that's a wonderful example
that tells you the level of the freedom of our judiciary.
And it's a wonderful story of the importance of an independent judiciary, and one that values the rule of law over loyalty to the people who appoint them. Let me ask you one more thing, and I appreciate how much time you've given us, Ambassador. And since you mentioned an environmental group, you know, we cover climate a lot on this show, and I'm just curious so our listeners can get a perspective from a country far from the United States and very different in many ways from the United States. Has climate change already affected the Gambia in ways you can cite?
Absolutely. You know, Gambia is one of the least polluting countries in the world. But the impact of climate change in our country is devastating. You know, we are a small country of about 13,000 square miles, and we have Atlantic Ocean. You know, the erosion is really eating our land, the high sea levels, and now the irregular
erosion, coastal erosion,
coastal erosion, yes, really, it's a big problem for us caused by climate change. And we are an agricultural country too. But nowadays, it's very difficult because we are rain-fed agriculture. So far, we are doing that. But because of climate change now, sometimes we have rain, too much rain, that will inundate our land, the farmers' their land, and destroy all the crops. And sometimes we simply have no rain. Mm. So it's very irregular. And we, like I said, we are the least polluting nations, but the brunt of the impact of climate change is huge for our country.
You know,
so that is why we took. I'm sure your listeners will be happy to hear this. I'm sure you followed the recently concluded climate conference.
COP26 climate summit. COP26. Yes.
Absolutely. I'm sure you've heard that Gambia is I think it's the only country that is said to be on track to meet our objectives.
Ambassador Dorda Daka Fadera, the Gambia's ambassador to the United States, thank you so much for your time. Good luck to you and everyone you represent.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
And we have a few minutes left with Salim Drame, president of the Gambian Youth Organization, a nonprofit based in the Bronx, not far from the building, Twin Parks Northwest, where the fire took place on Sunday and 17 people were killed, all of them, according to Salim, of Gambian heritage. Salim, let me just take one or two phone calls for you before we run out of time. Here is Mohammed, originally from Sierra Leone, nearby country, now in Buffalo. Mohammed, you're on WNYC. And because we ran a little long with the ambassador, we've got about 30 seconds for you. Hi there.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm from the West African Republic and Australia. I've lived in New York City for 8 years. I've also lived in the Gambia for 6 months. That was in 2015. So I just wanted to pay respect for the Gambian community, for those who died, and for the bereaved family. And also highlight that this is not the first time that the Gambian community is victim of a fire. And I guess it's time to do something about it, like community education and community reach out and send out on like a second. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And one more, Tia in the Bronx. You're on WNYC. Hello, Tia. Tia, are you there?
Hello. Oh, hello. Hi. Yes, I'm a Red Cross worker. I was at the fire at the respite center, but we keep strict confidentiality. But I also was a visitor to the Peace Corps site in the Gambia. And what I want to speak to is the great hospitality of the Gambian people. Other cultures say we're all family, but when you're a visitor, you know, a white visitor in the Gambia, you're greeted with, how are you? How is your mother? How is your father? On and on and on. This is a culture that sees the community as family. And people in that building, even if they have not lost a family member, they feel that a family member has been lost.
Tia, I'm going to leave it there for time, but thank you very much for that testimonial, kind of. And Salim Drame, as we run out of time, I don't know if there's anything you wanted to say to amplify anything the ambassador said, or would you just give the contact information maybe for the GoFundMe page that your organization has set up or any other ways that our listeners can help?
Yeah, so I want to say thank you for having me on the show. And I just want to, you know, for my just say thank you to the overwhelming support of not only folks in New York, not only folks in the Bronx, but all over the world. This is what we look for. This is what we call community. When, the reason why we see the funds rising is because that, you know, as what the previous speaker said, that everyone's thinking about what if this was my family? If I was in this situation, what would I do? So I just want to say thank you to everyone who have donated and who continues to donate. We have received overwhelming donations at our community center, and I just want to express my gratitude to everyone from, especially the city officials, mayor's office of immigrant affairs has been amazing. Everyone from the Bronx Board president have been amazing. You know, they have shown overwhelming support to us. And I just want to say thank you to each and every one of them.
And we're going to post the link to the GoFundMe page on our website. So listeners, if you want to go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrer Show, you can find out more. Salim Drama is president of the Gambian Youth Organization, a nonprofit based in the Bronx, not far from that building known as Twin Parks Northwest. Thank you so much for your time. Good luck to you and everyone.
Thank you. Thank you so much.